I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Resisting entreaties from GOP power players to run for president and a woman shouting, "Your country needs you," at a speech at the Reagan Library, Chris Christie is now back in New Jersey being governor. He said there was unfinished business to do. Elections for local and legislative races are just a few weeks away, and some are getting pretty hot. Redistricting is on the political agenda, so is tenure reform and other issues as well. We've invited two lively bloggers to join us on Radio Times, and they are with me here in our Philadelphia studios. Jay Lassiter is a Democratic political consultant, blogs at BlueJersey.com. And Jay, I've met you on our Facebook page. It's nice to meet you in person.
Meet you, Marty.
And Brian McGovern is with us as well. He's a Republican political strategist and a blogger at SaveJersey.com. And Brian, nice to meet you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And to our listeners, especially our New Jersey listeners, lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. Brian, let me begin with the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie. The presidential, flirtations seemed to be good for him. Do you think it was good for New Jersey as well?
I think it was good for New Jersey. I think it really, having the governor up on the national stage and having him gain popularity and it brings notoriety to the state. It kind of counterbalances the negative press we get from Jersey Shore, maybe you could say. But I think that having that time period where everyone was, isn't he, was a good thing for the state, maybe not for the state Republican Party, but
why
definitely
not for the
party?
State. Why not for the party?
I think that the governor made the right choice when he decided not to run for president for a number of reasons. As he said, he had unfinished business. However, we have an election coming up in what is it, 15 days? If he had determined that he was going to run for president, I think that would have killed the NJGOP and, you know, all of our assembly candidates, maybe all the way down ballot. I like to say to the ire of some of my political friends that if he had pulled a Palin on us, we would have been in trouble.
The idea of leaving office midterm.
Yeah, I feel like Governor Christie has given the Republican Party in New Jersey a face where previously it really hadn't had one in a very long time. So,
well, and Jay, I'm just curious. You work for the Democrats. How did you view Christie's? I mean, he certainly said no, and I'm not sure that no always meant no until he finally said it.
Well, he is a bit of a tease, and he's actually quite gifted at managing his. He's very good at stagecraft, and I think he was cognizant of the attention that he was getting, and he played it brilliantly. I'm a little surprised. I thought his ego might make running a little bit irresistible for him. I'm sort of not sorry. Sorry, I don't know how I feel about him not running. But I don't think he's been bad for the state of New Jersey. I don't think him having a high profile nationally. I mean, it's no worse than Snooki having a high profile for us.
We're back to Snooki here. But I noticed that his popularity, and these were a couple of polls, put him in the mid to even upper 50s, Jay. I mean, it looks like, I mean, he certainly had, I won't say a rocky first year, but certainly a combative first year. But it seems like he's done pretty well in his state.
Right. Well, his poll numbers are strong now. We're a long way towards his reelection campaign. So I suppose there's plenty of time for us to sort of reveal him for
the
sort of mediocre governor that I think he is, and I also think that for the last several months he's been on a sort of almost a de facto campaign. He's not behaving like himself. He's actually out there behaving for the press, and I sort of think when he gets back to governing and legislating, His poll numbers will reflect.
Are you saying he's censoring himself? He's not being the more combative Chris Christie?
When he behaves decidedly non-Christie like, his poll numbers reflect that positively.
They go up.
Yes.
I'm going to have to disagree with that. I mean, I don't think he's behaving in a non-Christie sort of way. I think it's election time. I think the governor's role at this point is to support the races that are highly competitive and to try to raise them money, which he's been doing. He was just down in, I believe, the second district yesterday, and I think he either was or is going to be in the first district, two highly competitive races here in South Jersey. He's not censoring himself, and he's not being un-Christie. He's still the same guy that told us to get the hell off the beach before Irene was coming. And as soon as the elections are over, you're going to see when they get back into the lame duck session that the governor is going to be that. I mean, I believe that his combative nature is really what gives him his popularity with New Jersey's people. They see him as someone who just speaks his mind, exactly what he ran as and exactly what he has remained. I also think that when he said no all that time when he was going to be running for president.
I mean,
I believe the line he said was that, you know, I don't know what I have to do short of suicide to tell you that I'm not running. And I believe that he was sincere in that regard until, like he said in his very long press conference, that you know, the right people were coming up to him saying, you should really look at this. It's very important. And it is. It you know, I have no doubt in my mind that if Christie had decided to run, that he could have won. He could have raised the right amount of money, and he could have run the right campaign. And his message is exactly what the American people are looking for right now. But he was right. It was not the right time for him. And, you know, there is something to be said when not only has he said no, he's also said, I'm not ready. That is not a good YouTube clip to have when you're heading into a presidential election. I think there was a YouTube clip that was about 15 minutes long of him saying just, I'm not ready. But I think he learned a lesson in that now when you see when people ask him, what about vice president? He doesn't just say no, because
that will haunt him.
That will haunt him if it ever happens. And it kind of lowers the media battle that he has going on.
I do want to move on from this, but Jay, looks like you want to add something. Go ahead.
I have never seen a man bat his eyelashes so coquettishly while saying no as Governor Corzine. Whoops.
Oh, listen to that.
As Governor Christie does. The entire time he's saying no, I mean, he literally was sort of cultivating the relationships with the national press and also with the New Jersey Press Corps, which I think would have been a lot. Look, when you're running for national office, it's a big difference than being a statewide executive. And I think the press scrutiny would have, it might have stung a little bit. You know, the press corps in New Jersey tends to fawn over him.
Mm. Because he makes good press?
I mean, well, sure. He makes their job interesting and he makes their job easy. And, you know, let's face it, the journalists on press row, many of them are very, very talented, but they're a lot less seasoned than they were. You know, we know how the industry's changing, the newspaper industry, and the bureaus in the State House are a lot less robust than they might have used to been. So, you know, you've basically got reporters whose beat it is to follow him, and they just sort of follow him around tweeting all the time. So you kind of have to wonder whether, you know, he might be able to take a really trenchant beating from the National Press Corps.
Well, let me move on because there are some elections coming up, and sure. Brian, pretend I'm from another country. Everyone is up for election in the state legislature?
Yes, that's true. Yeah, all the Senate and all the Assembly.
And New Jersey has a lot of government, right?
Yeah, I would say so, sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why it has high taxes, isn't it? That there's just a lot of government to pay for in New Jersey.
I mean, sure. I mean, we have a ton of local governments. We have our county system with the freeholder boards that control an enormous amount of money, and then our legislature likes to spend. So they were put in their place a little bit earlier this year by the governor, but you know, next year it'll be a whole nother round, of course. So,
and Democrats control the legislature at this point, Jay.
We've got a healthy majority in the lower house and maybe a less robust majority in the upper house. I'm not sure what the margin is. I think
I think there are 16 Republican senators.
And 24 Democratic senators. Right. And in the Assembly, it's 45 Democrats, 32 Republicans. So that's a pretty sizable majority, at least certainly compared to Pennsylvania.
Well, with regards to the Senate especially, you know, when it was close, up until about a year ago, it was an even slimmer margin. We picked up the 14th when
yes.
Republican Senator Bill Baroni was elevated to the Port Authority in New York. The Democrats picked up that seat in the very next election. And from what I understand, just that one seat, that one little seat made such a huge margin for the Senate Democrats because the governor's been so successful at poaching maybe one or two for each major battle.
So do you anticipate more battles ahead?
Yes. Lots of them. Knuckle-dragging, partisan. Yeah, for sure, especially if the margins tighten in the election.
And the margin is going to tighten.
You think Republicans are going to...
Absolutely. I mean, there are some key races. There are probably a good four or five key races where Republicans have a very strong chance. All the competitive races are pretty much on Democrat territory at this point. The map, I mean, we talked about redistricting. The map, look, the map is not good. It's not good, but it's better than it was. It's definitely more competitive than it was because of certain, I mean, I guess, trade-offs that were taken by the Democrats and just the way the demographics have shifted to the south a little bit in New Jersey. The 14th, like Jay just mentioned, with Kanka is running for Senate there. He's, you know, he has national name recognition, but he's also got a ton of name recognition and family ties in Hamilton, which is the biggest town in that district. I mean, Bill Baroni used to carry Hamilton, but with a 13,000 vote margin. Tom Goodwin last year, or when he ran, only won it by 400 votes, and you know, Greenstein picked up the difference everywhere else. If Kanka can tap into that Hamilton connection and really lead by a couple thousand votes there, that seat will go red once again.
Do you agree with that, Jay?
I think that's the seat that the Republicans have the slimmest chance of picking up. I think that the...
And which seat is this?
This is the 14th district, okay. Represented currently by Democrat Senator Linda Greenstein. She is perhaps the most battle-tested Democrat in the entire state legislature. She has consistently campaigned vigorously, very aggressively. She hustles, and I think that she does the retail politics quite well. So I think I think Brian cited five are competitive. Mm-hmm. I think maybe two. I think the 14th is probably going to be a very big margin for the Democrats.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't disagree that Linda Greenstein is a great retail politician. I won't say much about her actual legislative record, but... There are a lot of factors that are going to play into this race. I mean, like I said, Kanka he's a union guy. It's a big union district. I know that his union is not supporting him. Early on, they came out in support of Greenstein, but the rank and file union members, they don't always go with the leadership.
So you're saying the leadership isn't supporting him? But
yeah, I mean, look, union leadership is highly partisan in New Jersey and probably everywhere. Just because the NJEA supports a particular candidate doesn't mean the teachers are going to support a particular candidate. Just because the Iron Workers Union supports one candidate doesn't mean all the workers are. And I think that Kanka has the appeal to those individual members, those working men and women, that he could actually swing out those votes from the union, even though they're not getting the endorsement.
Marty, just
hold on to that thought, only because we have to take a very short break, and we are talking about New Jersey politics today on Radio Times. Talking with two bloggers. The voice you just heard is Brian McGovern. He's a Republican political consultant. Blogs at SaveJersey.com. Jay Lassiter is with us as well. He's a Democratic political consultant, and he blogs at BlueJersey.com. We want to hear from our Jersey callers at 1-888-477-9499. We'll be talking about some more of the races and some more of the issues after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Christiana Care Health System Center for Heart and Vascular Health supports WHYY. Studies show experience makes a difference in patient outcomes. Recognized by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons, Christiana Care cardiovascular surgeons perform more than 800 open heart procedures each year. And the team of heart specialists treats more than 8,000 total heart and vascular patients annually. Christiana Care, with locations in Pennsylvania and Delaware. More online at christianacare.org/heartleaders.
I'm Marty Moscowane. What more can we say to convince you to be a supporter of WHYY? You know what we do. We keep you informed about the important issues of the day. We introduce you to interesting people and ideas, and we provide a place for a good conversation. We think that's worth your pledge of support, and we know you do too. So in the waning hours of the fall membership campaign, make a call that will make a difference. That phone number is 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Support for WHYY is provided by Interact Theater Company, currently opening its 24th season with Sarah Treem's new drama, The How and the Why. Inspired by the best-selling book, Woman and Intimate Geography by Natalie Angier, The How and the Why pits two generations of evolutionary biologists against each other while both negotiate the fiercely male-dominated world of academic science. Evolution and emotion collide in this thought-provoking play about science, family, and the survival of the fittest. Tickets at interacttheater.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, again talking with Brian McGovern and Jay Lassiter about all things New Jersey politics. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. And we especially want to hear from our New Jersey listeners. And if you are voting, we hope that you do. We're curious about who and what you might be voting for. Jay, I know you wanted to add something. Go ahead.
Brian was actually talking about the Republican candidate up in the 14th Legislative District, and that's actually Richard Kanka, who's the father of Megan Kanka, who is the inspiration for Megan's Law. So I think that was what he meant by national recognition.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
And is this his first time to run for office?
I believe it is. I'm not positive, but I think so.
Well, let me ask you about someone a little bit closer to Philadelphia and has been in the news recently, a guy named Phil Mitch. He's a Republican.
Oh.
Running for
I'm
state
familiar.
State. Yes, and I'm going to toss this to you, Brian. He sent out a tweet in September 2nd, to about 44,000 of his followers, and this is what he said. Women, you increase your odds of keeping your man by being faithful, a lady in the living room, and a whore in the bedroom. Now, why would someone running for office, Brian, be giving out sex advice?
Well,
on Twitter.
It takes a special kind of person, I think, to make a tweet like that when you're running for office. But Phil Mitch, you know, he claims to be a real estate economic recovery expert. I'm not so sure he's qualified to be giving out sex advice. I don't know that I would. I mean, I've met him a couple of times. I don't know that I would ever take it from him. But his comments were wholly inappropriate. The article that was in the Inquirer yesterday, where he just kind of laughed it off, was, I think, increasingly offensive. And you know, the Inquirer interviewed CCGOP Chairman Tom Booth, and he wasn't aware that Phil had even spoken to the editorial board when they interviewed him. So the article kind of made Tom look bad, but he wasn't. I just want to stick up for him on the air here for a second, because he wasn't informed about what Phil had said, because up until that point, Phil was actually denying to us that some of these tweets were his or that some of them were doctored. So, you know, a chairman often, you know, sticks by his candidates, and I don't think the Inquirer treated Chairman Booth very fairly. I think they're treating Phil fairly. He's doing a lot of the damage to himself. I understand that he apologized today, though, and I'm glad for that.
Yes, I'd like to sincerely apologize for any offense I may have caused. I mean, this is a tempest in a...
That's not a Catholic schoolboy apology, Marie. No. That is an if-then clause. Look, I got to admit, I follow him on Twitter just because I tend to follow all candidates on Twitter, and I've seen a few of his tweets, and... you know, mostly they're sort of boilerplate stuff, links to political stuff. Mm-hmm. But the ones that were offensive and are offensive, I admit they sort of appealed to my inner 10-year-old child. But, you know, I mean, we're not 10-year-old kids running for office here. So I suppose anything that appeals to my inner 10-year-old is definitely bad news for a politician.
Well, indeed. And you'd think people would learn the lesson from Congressman Weiner and others that have, you know, in a sense, gotten themselves in trouble by thinking they were talking to one person. I mean, clearly he was talking to 44,000, but I'm assuming, Brian, this hurts whatever chances he might have had.
I mean, look, the 6th District after redistricting, I mean, the 6th District was bad before redistricting, and now with the addition of Pensauken, it's worse. The governor lost the new 6th by a very strong majority, and the chances of a Republican pickup in the district, mm-hmm. even though this is my home district and I've worked for some of the candidates in it, the two assembly candidates, Al Richardson and Greg Horton, are great candidates. People should be taking a look at them. But there wasn't much of a shot there in the first place. I do hope it doesn't hurt people down ballot. That would be a real tragedy, I think, because the freeholder candidates are great, and a lot of our local candidates shared Cherry Hill and Voorhees. They're good people. Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't help.
It
doesn't help.
It certainly doesn't help.
Go ahead, Jake.
Competition is good for both parties, and not only does... Do Phil Mitch's comments hurt everyone down ballot that he's running with, but it also makes, you know, for a walkover, ostensibly, for the Democrats. Now, I like James Beach, who's the incumbent, and I look forward to working with him on lame duck, on a lot of progressive things like marriage equality and pushing medical marijuana. But I also like the idea that that the competition that he's getting from the other party is making him better. And it's not in this case. And so the Democrats suffer as well.
I was reading somewhere, and I'll toss this back to you, Jay, that New Jersey is one of the most gerrymandered states in the country. Now, I've heard that other states claim that dubious distinction, but would you say that it is a gerrymandered state?
There's no question. We're also the most heavily, densely populated state in the country as well. But when you look at the 3rd Congressional District, you live there, right, Brian?
I'm actually in the 1st.
Okay, so I
where's the 3rd?
The 3rd stretches all the way from the Burlington County River towns all the way out to the Atlantic Ocean.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so, it's an interesting shape.
Yes.
And it's a hell of a campaign to run when you have to sort of navigate these, you know, these disparate cultures and counties and towns. And
although John Runyon was certainly able to do it last year. So,
no comment.
But redistricting is I mean, with the new census numbers, states are redistricting. Is that also true for New Jersey? Are they going to redraw
For Congress? I mean, yes, we're going to be losing a congressional seat. It's already been determined. The way that from what I've seen, the numbers, there are people moving south, Atlantic County, Ocean County, from the north. The only possible explanation or result that I could see from the redistricting process is that one of the Democrat seats are lost in North Jersey. It won't be from the South, in my opinion.
What do you think?
Funny, I see it totally differently.
Well, that's why you're both here. Right, go ahead, Jay.
The county which has experienced the most growth over the last census is Ocean County, which has boomed by like 12%, which is really astonishing. I was looking at those numbers. Burlington by about 6%, which is sort of average. Camden, 0.6. And these are the three counties which comprise the district where I live, for example. I have a feeling that all the action is going to be in Ocean County, and I think that it's going to put John Runyon in peril. He's a first-term Democrat. I'm sorry, a first-term Republican, and I think he's probably got the most to lose in redistricting. I hope so, anyway.
If the redistricting process is anything like the reapportionment process that we had earlier this year for the state legislature, there's going to be a lot of talk of incumbent protection and things like that, and keeping things stable. That seat, although John Adler did have it for a term, is historically a very Republican seat. I really don't see them making too many changes to that. I mean, I've heard rumors of maybe Cherry Hill leaving the district.
I think mathematically that would be impossible because it would have to be replaced by 75,000 other people
from other towns.
Well, I've heard that there's a possibility of the district actually moving more towards the eastern part of the state and picking up, you know, occupying a greater area over there, making it more compact. However, I really don't think that the South is going to be as much affected as somewhere in the North. I think there's going to be a consolidation of two of those wacky looking congressional districts in the North, maybe around Hudson, Essex area. And that is, I think, where it should come from. I mean, we're in a state where, I mean, if the redistricting process is going to be political, it always is. We're in a state where Republicans in the last two election cycles have had more votes statewide than Democrats, even though the Democrats still maintain their majorities. We take more votes statewide as an aggregate, and the breakdown right now is 7 Democrats and 6 Republicans in the congressional delegation. It wouldn't be doing anything but making it even. So,
well, and that's Brian McGovern. He's a Republican political strategist. He blogs at SaveJersey.com. Jay Lasseter is with us as well. He's a Democratic political consultant, and he blogs at BlueJersey.com. And yes, we are talking about Jersey and its politics and its politicians. And the lines are open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And there is an election in just a couple of weeks. Before we get to our callers, Jay, let me put something else on the table here. There is a referendum on the ballot that people should know about, allowing sports betting in New Jersey. You two were talking during the break about whether you think it's going to pass or not. What do you think?
I think it's going to pass. by the way, if you're voting absentee in New Jersey, it's on the back. Don't not fill it in.
The ballot is, I mean, the
it's
the
on
referendum.
The back page, and I actually mailed mine in without voting, which was a little bit of a bummer. So turn it over, Jersey voters. I suspect that Jersey voters will pass this referendum to allow sports betting whenever, if it becomes legal, probably by a 2-1 margin.
Do you agree with that,
Brian? I agree. I mean, the polling shows that it's a pretty popular initiative, so it'll probably pass.
We're basically funding more public policy with gaming money, yes. Which is kind of a crazy rabbit hole to be jumping
down. Does it raise questions about Atlantic City and the casinos and all? Is it connected to that, or is it just that New Jersey, like other states, are desperate to figure out how to get money?
I think it's more about raising revenue than, I mean, we're always worried about Atlantic City. It's a hard thing to maintain that city, but I don't think it's going to be any more of a blow than Atlantic City already finds itself in right now. So.
But you're right, Marty. It is sort of an act of desperation. Like, you know, we will look for ways to generate revenue that aren't called taxes in any way we possibly can, even if that's to sort of glorify or legalize vice.
Do you think of sports betting as vice?
I think of gambling as vice, yeah, and it's not beneath me. It's not a moral judgment
I was wondering about that.
You know, nor is drinking or smoking or any of those kinds of things. But I think when you project revenue off of these streams, which are inherently, look, you know, there's always the other side of the coin, and I think every time we make a movement to legalize or to deregulate gambling in New Jersey, the promise that comes with that is very, very rarely fulfilled.
I think it's a fine line to walk, but at the same time, we're in a state that has some of the highest property taxes in the entire nation, and if we need to get money to fund the government and to pay down our debt, to pay down our deficit, I mean, we had our bonds were, you know, downgraded, mm-hmm. and we have to get that solved. And if we can take money from people who are willing to spend it, knowing that there is a tax being taken out of it, rather than taking it from people by force, just by virtue of the fact that they own a home, I think that we have to look at that seriously.
Which is probably why it will pass, as you both are saying, 2-1, something like that.
Well, my property taxes are outrageous, Marty. When I tell my friends in other states what they pay, they look at me like, wow, you must be really rich to pay that much. And I'm like, well, no, we're really poor because we pay that much. And just the same, everybody in New Jersey is paying this much. And one of Chris Christie's biggest undelivered promises thus far has been his commitment to rein in property taxes. He's been in office two years. Mine have gone up every year since he's been in office, and they'll probably go up again this year. And after this election, all of New Jersey's property taxes or property values are being reassessed. So,
you know, to be fair, though,
and this is an issue. I know that this is a high issue.
Yes. To be fair, Jay, I mean, yes, your taxes have gone up, my taxes have gone up, but we both live in towns that have been controlled by Democrat, you know, councils and committees for over a decade.
Yeah, but they never campaigned on this promise to lower property taxes.
I would
taxes.
Say that the cap, even though the cap is imperfect and it has those caveats, it has helped slow the growth of property taxes, I would say. And, you know, the pension and benefit reform that passed this year, $260-something million being saved for the taxpayers that, you know, will find its way back down eventually. This is not a sprint. It's a marathon.
Chris Christie promised a smaller government. And I guarantee you, when he's running for re-election, every year he's been governor, our property taxes will have gotten larger. So maybe that's not as big as it would have gotten because of him, but it's still getting bigger.
Well, we could go on, but let me get some callers into the conversation at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about New Jersey politics, I guess, and its taxes as well. And let me see what Phyllis from Wynwood has to say. And Phyllis, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
You know, you hear, I've read articles and heard Terry Gross interview people about the Koch brothers and then Art Pope, who are these multimillionaire and billionaires who flood campaigns, Republican campaigns, with, you know, zillions of dollars. And I know that where I live in Pennsylvania, when we have local elections too on November 8th, and that even on the ward level in my township, the Republicans are being, each Republican candidate is being given $30,000, which is just unheard of for just one little ward. And I'm wondering if your guests know anything about the role of this kind of Republican money, you know, from outside of the state, that it could be playing in the elections in New Jersey.
Okay, Phyllis. And I'm going to toss that to you, Brian.
Actually, you know, I'm going to say something here that will probably be very unpopular among my friends in the Republican Party in New Jersey. Look, there's a lot of money that comes into New Jersey from out of state, especially for the Republicans right now, because the governor goes around and he gives speeches and he works for the RGA. He's an executive board member with the RGA. That's his duty
What's the RGA?
The Republican Governors Association, excuse me.
That's okay.
I mean, when he went to California to give the speech at the Reagan Library, he raised a couple $100,000 for the NJGOP. But, you know, $30,000 at the ward level, that seems a little outrageous. I would have to question the validity of that statement. But I can tell you right now, the NJGOP, as much as I love the people that work there, they're great. They do not spend enough on races that they don't deem to be competitive enough, or local races where, I mean, if you begin to chip away at some of these local municipalities and some of these districts that are close to being competitive, just by throwing a couple $1,000s there, you can really get something started. And they just refuse to do that. And we have more money in the bank now than we ever had. I mean, back when I first started doing politics, the NJGOP was in debt. And they didn't give anybody any money, and we understood that. Now they have millions of dollars in the bank,
and they're not spending
it. And they still don't spend it. They pick a couple districts, and that's it.
What do you think, Jay?
Well, I'm not really familiar with the examples the caller's citing, but she's expressing a general sort of unease with the flood of unregulated PAC money that's now a factor in all races. And this is the first statewide race we've really had in New Jersey since the Citizens United verdict came down, which basically allows for all of this sort of undocumented PAC money to flood in. Now, of course, I'm critical of it because at this point, the Democrats are still playing catch up, and I do think the notion that corporates can donate unlimited money to candidates is really troubling. I mean, I'm one of those liberals that do not feel that corporations are people, and I'm troubled as well.
Well,
you have a face
now,
there, Brian.
The PACs, I mean, the Citizens United, I mean, someone please correct me if I'm wrong, but corporations can't give unlimited money to candidates. They can give unlimited money to PACs, which can spend money on behalf of candidates. Now, I don't know about you, but I haven't really seen that many commercials, maybe because of the district that I live in, but I haven't really seen any advertisements being done in kind by PACs, except for maybe a couple unions, which, you know, like the NJEA and some others, but... I don't see how Citizens United is really playing that big of a role at all in our races.
But it'll be interesting when, for instance,
the presidential election will be different.
Or Chris Christie's re-election campaign.
I mean, there are those PACs that were, you know, coming under fire for not disclosing their donors on both sides. And that's a problem that needs to be addressed, I suppose. But the idea that Republican coffers are being flooded with cash by corporations is just a fallacy.
Do you agree with that, Jay? Would you know?
At least in New Jersey.
And we are talking about New Jersey.
Well, no, I don't know. And I'm troubled by the potential that this unregulated money has to influence our electoral system. Even if it were to influence in a way that I would want it to be influenced, even if it broke my way, I'm still sort of philosophically troubled by all of this sort of anonymous money that's swishing around out there.
And that's Jay Lassiter, who joins us along with Brian McGovern. We are talking about New Jersey politics, some of the interesting races coming up. There's a referendum. We'll be talking about teacher tenure and some of the conflicts, I guess, or disagreements between New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and the legislature and some of the unions in New Jersey. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY and presents an exhibition with an original live theater performance, Fighting for Democracy, Who is the We in We the People? The real-life struggles and triumphs of seven diverse citizens who fought for freedom and justice during World War II. Compelling stories come to life from ordinary people with extraordinary legacies. At the National Constitution Center now through January 16th. Tickets at constitutioncenter.org.
I'm Marty Moscowane. What more can we say to convince you to be a supporter of WHYY? You know what we do. We keep you informed about the important issues of the day. We introduce you to interesting people and ideas, and we provide a place for a good conversation. We think that's worth your pledge of support, and we know you do too. So in the waning hours of the fall membership campaign, make a call that will make a difference. That phone number is 1-888-345-9499, or you can pledge online at WHYY.org. Thanks.
Penn Medicine supports WHYY. Have you been feeling anxious, worried, on edge? The Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit at Penn Medicine is studying the causes and treatment of mood disorders. You may be eligible to participate in a research study looking at the effects of natural supplements to treat the symptoms of worry and anxiety. Initial evaluations determine eligibility for treatment. To learn more about Penn Medicine's Integrative Medicine and Depression Research Unit, 215-662-3462. 215-662-3462.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Jay Lassiter. He's a Democratic political consultant in New Jersey, and he blogs at BlueJersey.com. Brian McGovern is a Republican political consultant also in New Jersey. He blogs at SaveJersey.com. And obviously, we are talking about New Jersey today on Radio Times. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Jay, would you say that the next showdown between Governor Christie and the teachers has to do with teacher tenure?
That'll be the next big showdown. Yes, indeed. And it's probably not going to be a passion play I enjoy watching.
Why not?
Very much. Well, because, you know, first of all, I'm a product of public schools, and I'm very proud of that. I think, you know, it's one of the reasons that that I've had so many opportunities that I've had. You know, I give a lot of credit to, you know, some of my mentors from public schools, but I think the leadership of New Jersey's public school union,
NJEA,
it's almost awkward for me to talk about this because, you know, Democrats and unions and progressives, I mean, you know, we are cut from the same cloth. And yet when I see the leadership of the NJEA, not only do I see their incompetence elevating Chris Christie's stature, I mean, there's such a weak foil for him, and he derives so much of his capital by beating the hell out of them. But I think that they're doing a tremendous disservice to teachers, to students, and to taxpayers. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but I don't think it's going to be pretty.
Do you think there's some compromise, Brian, that they can come up with when it comes to teacher tenure, which obviously has to do with evaluating teachers on how they perform in the classroom?
Right. I know that the NJEA has previously, I mean months ago, offered some sort of compromise on what they think the reform reform process for tenure should look like, but I don't think that offer will ever even enter the governor's mind throughout this process.
And why should it? Why should the governor take, you know what, I think that until the leadership resigns from the NJEA, that nobody's really going to take them seriously. Not only from the other party, and not only from independent-minded New Jerseyans, but also from Democrats as well. So I would actually hope that if anybody from the NJ is listening right now, that they will urge their leader to resign, because that's the only chance that they're going to have to be successful moving forward.
Well, I could support that call.
Well, I know, but I'm curious, Jay, only because you're a liberal, you're a Democrat. Do you think you're alone? Do you think you're a lone voice, or do you think there are others that feel the way you do about the NJEA?
I think that there are plenty of people who will disagree with me and accuse me of blasphemy for saying this, but the leadership of the NJEA is so rampantly incompetent in service to their teachers. That's who they're there to serve. That I can't imagine that there aren't other people who feel the same way. I hope that there are callers who feel the same way who call in. I hope there are Democrats who feel the same way.
Anything you want to add to that, Brian?
I mean, we're still talking about the tenure reform, right?
Yes, we are.
Do you want to talk about the actual plan?
Sure.
I mean, look,
The short version.
I agree wholeheartedly with the governor's ideas for reform. I mean, right now there are two levels on which we judge teachers. It's adequate and inadequate or something like that. He wants to make it a five-stage process. And, you know, the thing about it is, you know, teachers are incredibly important. Public school is incredibly important and should be supported. But being a teacher is not the only job where every single person who does it is magically incredible at their job. And there are teachers out there who are great, and that they should be rewarded for how great they are, and they shouldn't have to. They shouldn't have to, you know, abide by the same standards that some teachers who underperform do.
Well, and I don't want to belabor this, but there have been times when Governor Christie has been, you know, personally combative, confrontive with individual teachers, which makes him look like he doesn't like teachers.
Yes. I mean, I would say those YouTube videos that you see of the town halls, I mean, those teachers are coming up to him and being all worked up and upset and, and you know, he just tells it like it is, whatever comes to his head. So that's kind of what happens.
Yeah. But he's given him a reputation of being anti-teacher.
I don't think he's anti-teacher. I think he's pro-student. I think he's pro-education, but he's pro-doing it the right way, efficiently, and in a way that works for all students in New Jersey.
All of those videos that were put out by Chris Christie's taxpayer-funded in-house communications machine. So if they've made him look unsympathetic, then it's his staff he needs to have a word with, not his rivals at the town hall meetings.
Let me get Susan from Princeton to join us on Radio Times. And Susan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
I just wanted to say, as a former teacher in New Jersey who retired in June, that I cannot imagine anyone wanting that job anymore, with the governor's combative behavior, the way he's attacked us on the pension plan, on our benefits, and just a general nasty, vicious attitude towards teachers. I know at least 1,000 teachers retired last year just out of fear about what he would do. And I think he counts on that. He's just, in my opinion, a bully.
Well, let me see what...
I wouldn't want... I don't know anyone who I would recommend to have that job anymore.
That's interesting, Susan. Let me see what Brian and Jay have to say.
I mean, look, I can only speak... I'm not a teacher, but I can only speak from my personal experiences. I have a lot of friends who I, you know, went to college with, went to high school with, who are now out searching for teaching jobs every single day. I mean, if 1,000 teachers retired, I'd love to see how many we replace them with, because I know there are tons of people out there looking for teaching jobs. It's still a desirable profession. Sure. And people, they're not just out to get the pension. They're not just out to get the benefits. They want to do the job because they love the job. And I think that's the type of people that we need to be promoting in the system.
Susan, thanks for the call. Yeah, Jake.
I wouldn't want to be a teacher either. Frankly, I think the climate for teachers has been lamentable and irredeemable since the No Child Left Behind Act passed, 10 years ago during the Bush administration. And I do think that in spite of my criticisms of the NJEA, I do think that Governor Christie has used public education as his, his personal sort of scapegoat for everything that is wrong with New Jersey. And I think that really stinks, because what we're doing is we're creating a climate where good people don't want to teach. And I can't imagine.
And we need good teachers.
Well, look, I just want to say that Governor Christie is right to go after the education issue. Look, when we're in a state that in the city of Newark we spend $24,000 per student, but only 21% of the students are graduating on time, and 90% of those that do graduate need remedial assistance before going on to university, if they do, something has to change. And the reforms, I mean, you may not agree with all the reforms, but at least he's trying to do something.
Let me put something out. We could go on, and we certainly have done shows about this in the past, and we do have some callers coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Jay, you had mentioned a bill to decriminalize the possession of small amounts of marijuana.
Well, right now,
where does
actually
that stand?
I do know that it's on the horizon, and that's something that I have strong personal opinions about. But right now, the battle that we're facing in New Jersey is getting the governor to implement the medical marijuana program, which is the law, which people who are suffering from AIDS or cancer or whatever gruesome diseases they might have that could benefit from this, they're being denied their medicine, because Chris Christie he's not fond of the medical marijuana program in New Jersey. It was signed by his predecessor, and he's taken a very big government, big regulation approach to it, and he's basically killed it. He's strangulating it with regulations.
What do you think, Brian?
The governor during his campaign said that he would, implement the medical marijuana program, and he should. But if you look at what's going on in California right now with the federal government coming in and causing all sorts of problems for the distributors, the legal distributors of marijuana, and the doctors, undergoing a lot of scrutiny. I think it's very important that we take the careful steps to implement this program so that we don't end up having the same trouble with the feds that California is today.
I don't want to see what happened in California happen in New Jersey. You know, I think they are way too permissive, but I think denying people with cancer access to medical marijuana is despicable. And I think it's an example of how Chris Christie is more concerned about maintaining his law and order image than, you know, basically being mindful and sympathetic to those on the margins.
Let me get Jackie from New Hampshire, of all places, to join us on Radio Times. And Jackie, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm one of many of my friends that have left the state, early retirement, moving away from the high taxes. And the issue that I wanted to comment on was smaller government. I moved out of the town that the governor lives in. I lived a mile from him. We had two police stations a mile away from one another, two libraries a mile away from one another, elementary schools a mile and a half away from one another, middle schools a mile and a half away from one another. The taxes that we end up paying to support all of this, you know, the two mayors, I would love to see the governor put his money where his mouth is and sit the mayors down in his own community and get them to even come close to agreeing to have one public library.
Well, Jackie, and I'm sure living in New Hampshire, we know how people in New Hampshire feel about government and taxes. I'm sure you pay a lot less. But Brian, this is, I guess, what I was referring to earlier, which is just, there's a lot of government in New Jersey.
I mean, look, the governor is apparently, there is a shared services bill that's going to be coming up, maybe in the lame duck or maybe in the next legislative session. It's very important. It's one of the top things on the governor's agenda with the toolkit and all that. But you know, I just want to comment on one thing that, you know, Governor Christie and a lot of Democrats, especially the Freeholder Board in Camden County, where we're from, are pushing this police consolidation. And it's a very big issue. And a lot of other counties some other counties have done it, and it's been successful. However, other counties don't have Camden City in them, which is a city that has no money and is laying off police officers left and right. And I would actually say to anyone in Camden County listening to this, that if your town is run by Democrats right now, if you vote those Democrats in this year, and they say they're not for the police consolidation, guarantee you they will fall in line when the time comes. Because this, you know, the freeholders are pushing it, and the governor, we're getting it from both sides, but the CCGOP is vehemently against it, as are all of our candidates down ballot.
What do you think, Jay?
This gets into examples of how, you know, me and Brian, even though ideologically we're very different, I mean, we do share a lot of the same sort of outsider DNA. I look at it the exact same way he does. You know, there will be winners and there will be losers. And, you know, I have a feeling that the town that I'm in will be a loser because we're a more prosperous town. And I don't think that that's really going to make much of a dent on crime in the less prosperous towns. You know, I'm a liberal. Mm-hmm. I want to spend lots of money, lots of tax money making the people of Camden secure and safe and well-educated and all of that. But, you know, the pie, my pie is getting smaller, too. And what we're being asked to do as more prosperous members of the county, I think, you know, that shouldn't be coming out of our pockets.
No.
And you say no, Brian.
No, I agree with Jay. But, you know, I mean, in the town where I live, we have two school districts. We have a regional one and a local one for the younger grades. And they don't even share all their services. And the schools are literally, the middle school is literally 2 miles from the high school. And they don't share all their services. It boggles my mind. I mean, I would hate to say that I think the state should step in and force it to happen. However, I'm not exactly sure why people on the local level are not willing to give up their little kingdoms and share services when it's, you know, it's an obvious cost savings.
Well, and that's Brian McGovern joining us along with Jay Lassiter. We are talking about New Jersey politics here on Radio Times. And I'm Marty Moscowen. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY.
And indeed you are on this Friday morning. Good morning to you. Ed Cunningham here with Debbie Builder, one of the producers of Radio Times. And we are proud and delighted to ask for your support before we go on to part two of today's Radio Times, which will be talking about the death of Colonel Gaddafi in Libya and what it all means for the Middle East and probably the rest of us in this world. And you know, because it's Marty Moscowen, it's going to be a well-considered hour. So please do stay tuned for that. But first of all, Debbie, here's the number. We always have to make sure that we can afford to put programs like this on, and that's where you come in. 1-888-345-9499. I'll repeat, 1-888-345-WHYY. Online, WHYY.org. Debbie, I would hasten to say that no matter which side of the political aisle you are on, you found something to think about, to be engaged with, by listening to this hour with those two bloggers from South Jersey. And that's what public radio is all about.
And, you know, there aren't many places you can get in-depth coverage of local and regional, the issues that are important to your community. You can find it on Radio Times and at WHYY. That's what some of your support is going to. So give us a call now, 1-888-345-9499, so we can continue to give you the information you need about the issues that are important to you right in your own backyard.
Well, I think it would be very appropriate if we got that much closer to ending this membership drive around one of our signature programs on WHYY. You think of Fresh Air, certainly in the afternoon, and you certainly think of Radio Times in the morning, coming up on 25 years, is that right, Debbie?
Yep, next year.
Of some of the most informed radio. You're going to hear Philadelphia Magazine said no less, the best radio program in Philadelphia. You should be proud, I know, Debbie, to be part of that. And you should be proud of it because you help put it on the air with your support. Your support is always important. It's always welcome. But if you are a fan of Radio Times, now is the time to make your voice heard, because we're rushing to try to get this membership drive completed as quickly as possible, and to do a big chunk of it around Radio Times is only appropriate, and you do it right now. And again, as I say, Debbie, coming up in that second hour, you know you can trust Marty to enlighten us that much more about what I'm sure is a chaotic situation in Libya.
Right. Give us a call, 1-888-345-9499. Again, coming up this next hour, we're going to be talking about Libya, what's next for this country, all the turmoil that's going on right now, with a report with a Washington bureau chief of Al Jazeera. We've got a poet, a sort of expat poet from Libya talking too. So give us a call. Show that you support this kind of programming, 1-888-345-9499. It just takes a minute. We have these amazing folks from the Mural Arts Program who are going to take your call. It's Mural Month this month. So give us a call again, 1-888-345-9499. Join WHYY and all these thousands and thousands of people who support what we do.
Check out this segue I'm going to make here. Speaking of murals and arts and all that sort of thing, you might want to avail yourself of the WHYY NPR 2012 calendar.
Yeah.
That's available to you for a $10 a month pledge for the next year. And why do I tie that in with art? Well, as any good wall calendar will do, this has got, you know, it's got the January and February.